Gonna be a cool show tonight. There's a theme I've noticed already on the website, Coast to Coast AM for tonight's show. You ready? It's startling and shocking. I love that. In fact, that's what we do have. We have shocking proof that John Lennon foretold his own death and perhaps sold his soul to the devil. So says one writer, and startling new evidence that the death of General George S. Patton was not as it has been presented, that in fact he was assassinated. I love this book. It's called Target Patton, The Plot to Assassinate General George S. Patton. In the end, I don't know that Robert Wilcox has the slam dunk smoking gun case that would really, you know, make everybody a believer, but he has got some amazing research that leads you right up to that conclusion that Patton was assassinated. Now, you may have heard of this theory before. I have to confess, it was an experience to me not unlike when they say you buy a green car, and then after you buy a green car, you're driving around and you notice how many other green cars are on the road that you didn't know until you had one. And it was like that for me on this book. I got this book. I started reading it on, I don't know, whenever I got. I started reading it the second I broke it out of the box. Loved it. And then I started telling people, I was walking around with it while I was reading it. And they say, what are you reading? Saying, oh, I'm reading this book about how George S. Patton was assassinated. And how many people walked in and go, oh, yeah, I know that theory. And then they would start telling me stuff that was in the book. And I'm like, oh, man, I didn't realize how commonly this was being discussed in some circles. And for that matter, how some people had already come to the conclusion that it makes perfect sense. And it does. And we'll let Robert Wilcox make his case coming up next hour. He'll be our main guest on Coast to Coast. But first, just to get us started as the freezing rain and light snow in the upper Midwest comes my way, where I'm expected sometime during the course of this show tonight to get as many as maybe as 3 or 4 inches of snow between now and tomorrow morning. I give you coming up next, Joe Diaz-Godas on Lennon, which will mean when we couple that with crypto news, we've got dream teams, dream machines, and dream writers next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Ponet. All right, so heading into our first hour guest in just a second, let me remind you what's coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. I'm going to be on the program tomorrow night, second Sunday of the month. And our guest will be none other than Dean Koontz, one of the greatest fiction writers at work in America today. And his new book is Your Heart Belongs to Me. And it's a spooky story about a guy who gets a heart transplant. And then the shocking and startling events that happen after that. He is stalked by somebody who believes that they have every right to the feelings and emotions that the person has. And well, I'll leave that for now because I haven't read more than like the first 15, 20 pages of the book because I was reading this new book on Patton until about 37 minutes ago. I finally finished it. So tomorrow night, Dean Koontz, and I'll have a chance to read his book tomorrow, and we love having him on, and it'll be very cool. And because it's Dean Koontz, of course, this means that inevitably we're going to be spending a little time talking about dogs. Dogs, angels, in the holiday season. And did you see that story about dogs in the news this week? We'll share that tomorrow night with the guy who watches them very closely, Dean Koontz. In crypto news for tonight, if there were acorns out on my front lawn, you wouldn't be able to find them. I already have, well, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches of snow out there. There have been several early snowstorms so far this season in the upper Midwest. Last year, we didn't get our first real snow until right around Christmas. But this year, it's coming in fast, and they're coming in thick. These snowstorms are affecting us. But up and down the East Coast, residents and naturalists alike have been scratching their heads over a simple question. Where are all the acorns? This is a story that CNN presented. I thought it was fascinating. Oak trees have shed their leaves, but the usual carpet of acorns is not crunching underfoot. In far-flung pockets of Northern Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and other states, scientists have found no acorns whatsoever. Zero. I can't think of any other year like this, said one naturalist. The mystery has found its way onto the internet where, quote, "No acorns this year" discussion on topics.com yielded more than 180 comments from people reporting acorn disappearances as far away as Connecticut and North Carolina. "What is going on?" screamed a resident in Maplewood, New Jersey. "Now we're finding dead squirrels, too. Should we all be concerned?" "Not necessarily," naturalists say. "Last year, a bumper crop of acorns..." Might be the answer to this. Scientists say that when acorn production runs in cycles, you can have a big like down year after a big crop year, and last year was a big crop year. It fits with the physiology of seed reproduction, they report in this CNN story. The trees are exhausted energy-wise from last year. But even if some people are surprised at the complete absence of nuts in parts of Virginia, I'm not. Think about it. You know, there are no nuts in parts of Virginia because I think they all rolled up to Washington, right? Maybe they're just nuts about secrecy there. The Federal Reserve refused a request by Bloomberg News to disclose the recipients of more than $2 trillion of emergency loans from U.S. taxpayers and the assets of the central bank is accepting as collateral. Quote, "If they told us what they held, we would know the potential losses that the government may take and that they don't want us to know that," said a senior managing director at a New York-based firm. Yeah, because, you know, if the government told the people all the things they were doing, that might lead to, I don't know, democracy. Brett McKeon writes, "The truth isn't just out there. It's apparently right near the Sydney Harbor Bridge." Shocked Daily Telegraph reader Steve Joliffe spotted what appears to be a flying saucer hovering directly above Miller's Point while checking out Google Maps. Anybody can go see it. You can link up to this story through coasttocoastam.com. You can see on a Google Maps image, is that a UFO? "I live in the street on the corner. It was a beautiful view of the harbor. I was just trying to get a look on the Google when I saw it. It just caught my eye. I couldn't get back to bed. I thought it was a UFO straight away." The bizarre discovery comes at the tail end of a bumper year for close encounters of the third kind all over Australia. Perhaps it's not a coincidence that the new version of The Day the Earth Stood Still comes at the end of a busy year of UFO sightings. In the Online Examiner, "The Day the Earth Stood Still, Fiction or Fact?" The remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still, which opens Friday, December 12th, and the original version from 1951 could be more factual than you think. So says the Examiner, though the current movie trailer indicates a departure from the early script. Boulder resident Paolo Harris teaches a course about Hollywood's role in disclosing UFO information. She has proposed that the 1951 version of The Day the Earth Stood Still may have been the first collaboration between the military and the film industry. The goal was to get the public used to the reality that, quote, "we are not alone." The Day the Earth Stood Still could hardly have been the first collaboration, though, between the military and the film industry, if you ask me. But maybe it was the goal of the picture to get the public used to the idea of friendly or misunderstood aliens. Not having seen this new movie, however, I think the better question is, Keanu Reeves acting. Fact or fiction? We'll know in a couple weeks. From physorg.com, for years, many physicists have accepted that dark matter is composed of weakly interacting massive particles, or WIMPs. Weakly interacting massive particles. The fact that WIMPs can naturally explain the amount of dark matter in the universe left over from the Big Bang has been described as the WIMP miracle. Not everyone, though, thinks this phenomenon represents an ironclad prediction that dark matter is made of WIMPs. "We know little about dark matter since we can't measure it directly," says Jonathan Feng of physorg.com. "But there are theories and models. WIMPs are attractive because they happen to appear in many popular theories of new particles and interactions." WIMPs that are attractive? Sort of like the music of Rick Astley? Cheap shot. In fact, Rick Astley parodied himself in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Did you see that on YouTube? Man, that was funny. I had a new level of respect for him. He was on some sort of parade float about the North Pole, and he stepped out and started singing in a way that was a tribute to all of the Rick Astley pranks that get played on YouTube, all the YouTube pranks that feature the music of Rick Astley. It was pretty funny. And speaking of switcheroos on the North Pole, that was a stretch. It was a dying on a scale never before seen on Earth. The slaughter was everywhere, writes Michael Riley in Discovery, the online version of the cable channel. The slaughter was everywhere. The fertile ocean, the balmy supercontinent Pangaea, were transformed into killing fields littered with the bodies of ancient animals. By the time the dust had settled 250 million years ago, 90% of life on the planet had been snuffed out. The new theory suggests it all started with the magnetic pole shift. The superplume hot material of, you know, gas rising up and everything all starts with a shift in the poles. And by the way, that, you know, that led to the birth of supervolcanoes. And that's a handy reminder, according to many scientists, that we are already overdue for a magnetic pole shift. It could happen any day, but when it comes, it's not just going to screw up the new iPhone you're getting for Christmas. It's going to create something much bigger. Not that it's going to happen at Christmas, but you know what I'm saying. At least it's the iPhone I was hoping to get for Christmas. I say I was because the latest piece of techno gadgetry is so massively cool. It makes the iPhone look like a pencil. While other presents may have you going to bed on Christmas Eve with dreams of sugar plums dancing in your head, this new device can actually show you the sugar plums. A research team in Japan has successfully displayed simple images produced in the human brain on a computer screen. Cool. In a nutshell, that is to say a nutshell for everybody except in parts of Virginia where there are no acorns left, the device converts electrical signals sent to the visual cortex into images that can be viewed on a computer screen. In their experiment, they showed test subjects the six letters in the word neuron and succeeded in reconstructing the word on screen by measuring the brain activity. As the technology progresses, it could be possible to see what people are thinking, what they dream about, and record it for posterity. I wish I had one of those things right now. Just this week, I had the weirdest dream that I cannot remember. But have you ever woken up from a deep sleep with the last thought you had when you were dreaming, but you can't remember why you had that last thought? It's like you leapt back from sleep world to waking world with the last thought, but no context for it. The other night, and I'm not making this up, I woke up with this thought. Yeah, but wouldn't it be easier if we just found prostitutes that could sing happy birthday? And I have no idea what the dream was about. I just remember waking up kind of agitated because the person I was talking to in my dream just didn't seem to get it. The simple beauty of my logic. Yeah, but wouldn't it be easier if we just found prostitutes that could sing happy birthday? I had no idea what it's about. So, you know, if you were the other person in my dream, and you know what I was talking about, if you remember what the argument was, let me know. Better yet, maybe I don't want to know what we're talking about. Joe Niezgoda has written a book about a guy that did a lot of dream writing. He would have a dream, and then he would turn around, and he would write a song from that, often got melodies and lyrics completely come to him. In a dream, John Lennon kept a pad of paper and a pen next to the bed and wrote down these thoughts all the time, and they often turned into major hits. We know this because we have not just been John Lennon fans for years, but also because it wasn't that long ago that we were in a discussion on Coast to Coast AM with May Pang. In fact, I just talked to May earlier this week on the anniversary of the death of John Lennon. And so I have her tender heart in my mind here as we have this conversation, Joe, about whether or not John Lennon had made a deal with the devil. First of all, good evening, and how are you?
I'm fine, Ian, and I'm very glad to be with you tonight.
Okay, so you're a Lennon fan, a Beatles fan?
Oh, I'm an avid first-generation Beatle fan. Ever since they appeared on Ed Sullivan in 1964, I was hooked.
Yeah. like so many of us. So what led you to start investigating whether or not John Lennon had made a deal with the devil?
Well, as an avid Beatle fan, you might be aware of the Paul death clues. The Beatles have always had something sinister surrounding them, in as much as the Paul McCartney death clues fascinated me and many other fans. But the clues just didn't, just didn't fit. I couldn't connect the dots. But once John Lennon was murdered, I pointed the clues from Paul McCartney, the initial clues that I had amassed through the years and that many people have done the same with, towards John Lennon. And then all of a sudden, these round pegs were fitting in round holes.
Okay. Very interesting thought on this. The new book is called The Lennon Prophecy, The New Examination of the Death Clues of the Beatles. So if it's the death clues of the Beatles, then it sounds like you're saying, and I've read a little bit about this, but I'm just filling for everybody else, that the Beatles were kind of in on this too then, that at least in some form or fashion, this was something that you're not the first person to figure this out.
No, it's been around since, like I say, since the beginning of the Beatles. And in fact, they themselves played the game. I mean, John Lennon, I'll give you an example. John Lennon in the song Glass Onion, he says, quote, and here's another clue for you all. The walrus was Paul. But right. What was interesting was that was from 1968. And the Paul McCartney death clues, that didn't even become public or, in the public domain until 1969. So it's a little bit interesting. There's a little of a timeline break there. He was giving clues to people who hadn't yet discovered the fact that these clues were there.
Okay. Well, some people would say that's because it never existed. In the case of Paul McCartney, that he wasn't killed. There was no body switch, as was alleged, that Paul had been killed in a car accident and the Beatles were leaving clues on their album covers and in their music, that it was just a matter of, it was just, John being clever in a lyric and people seeing that, tying that to things that really had no business being tied together and coming to this conclusion. So where else then that do you see clues that says that John Lennon had made a deal with the devil?
Well, part of it is there were a lot of clues about John Lennon's death throughout their songs. I mean, people look at it, they could say it's coincidence, synchronicity, and that very well may be. But if you put everything together and amass it in a book like I did, well, then all of a sudden it paints a little bit of a different picture. It's a little bit more difficult to dismiss. Now, one of the things, this did not start out as a book on selling his soul. This was a book on prophecy, because his death was completely predicted down to the day, the weapon, who, what, when, where. All those questions were answered. And I mean, it's a little bit easier coming back. You know the answer and you do a little reverse engineering.
Right.
But the fact is, those clues were there. Now, as far as the sinister part with this, with Satan, the Beatles themselves, are responsible for that aspect of it. I mean, one of the telling signs is the Yesterday and Today album. The Yesterday and Today album, the original cover, that was released in 1966, and actually 750,000 copies were printed. And on that album cover, the Beatles are posed with butcher smocks on, and they're covered with pieces of raw meat. And there's infant baby dolls cut up with their heads and arms and torsos laid all around the Beatles. And, that was dismissed, and that was released. And, I mean, there was such an outcry from the public that those albums were recalled. Now, people say that's avant-garde art. You could say whatever you want. But one of the highest forms of Satan worship is infanticide, which is exactly what that could be interpreted as. Infanticide is where you sacrifice young virgin babies to the name of Satan.
Right. And you dismiss the Beatles' explanation that they were already this was kind of a tweak of the nose of everybody that was, making them out to be such idols and the screaming throngs of fans. This was just sort of a way of going, hey, look, this is who we really are. We're just a bunch of merry pranksters, that kind of a thing.
Well, that could be. I mean, that's one interpretation of it. This just happens to be my interpretation.
Okay.
And I mean, again, there's other signs as well in the book. This isn't the only thing that led me down this path.
Oh, I get that. Well, then we'll go to this coming up. Then next, hang on. We're going to put the phone numbers out there too, so you can join in the conversation. Our first hour guest, Joe Niezgoda, who says that not only did John Lennon prophesy his own demise, but that also that there are clues through all of the Beatles music that John had made a deal with the devil. Let's go over both of those in greater detail coming up next. The book is The Lennon Prophecy, next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, during the break here, I'll get my blog up on crypto news from earlier this hour. Coming up tomorrow night, don't forget, it's Dean Koontz back on again. Always fun when Dean Koontz comes on. He tells such interesting stories. And in this case, the new book is just creepy in its premise. It's called Your Heart Belongs to Me. A guy who's had a heart transplant finds himself being stalked by a woman who says that she is entitled to everything he owns. It's not what you think. We'll talk about it coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. Coming up next hour, looking forward to our conversation with Robert Wilcox. The book is called Target Patton, and it explores the question of whether or not George S. Patton was assassinated. If there ever was a compendium on the evidence for a conspiracy to kill Patton, it's this book. It's a great read, especially perfect for somebody that, you know, lived through that era, maybe somebody who's always had this belief. Great for Christmas gift giving, and we'll make the case for you coming up next hour with Robert Wilcox. And in the meantime, we'll get back to a couple of your calls, at least, for Joe Niezgoda about the Lennon prophecy. Did John Lennon foresee his own death in such a specific way as Joe was talking about, including like time and date and place? And then also, could it be that he had sold his soul to the devil for success? We'll hear how Joe lays out that coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, for some reason, I can't. Oh, here I am. I'm just getting the blog thing taken care of, and I click on that. Okay. We'll get to your questions and comments for Joe Niezgoda, The Lennon Prophecy, in just a moment. But, Joe, all right, so take us back from the beginning. When do you believe this deal with the devil happened with John Lennon?
Well, I think it was probably back in 1960. These packs are typically 20 years, and, you know, tracing back from the time he died in 1980, it would go back to 1960.
Tell me, when you say typically they're 20 years, how do you get that?
Well, it's everything that I've put in this book is nothing, you know, I made up nothing. Everything is based on historical information and things that have been written in literature. You know, since the beginning of writings, they've talked about Satanism and deals with the devil.
Well, okay, but I'm saying I'm a little familiar with the writings about that. I've never heard a 20-year pact. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, it just means that, like with Dr. Faust as an example, it was a 20-year pact where you would bargain with the devil for your soul in return for 20 years of prosperity or whatever it is you bargained for. But it's usually a 20-year cycle.
Okay, so it's not just the end of your natural life.
No, it would not be the end of your natural nightlife. It would be, okay, like I say, from the time of the start of the pact.
All right. And do any idea where this transaction would have occurred?
It's difficult to say, but he had some real ties when he was off in Germany. And a lot of his anti-Christian behavior could be traced back to the times when, even before Ringo joined the group, when Pete Best was their drummer. In Pete Best's book, he talks about some of John's anti-Christian behavior. So it goes back to the days of Germany.
Okay. And in the deal with the devil, the deal was for success, personal success, typically. Do you see any other riders in the contract? Is there anything else? It's just a matter of finance and world fame, or give me an idea of what do you think this pact, you know, was about specifically?
Well, I think the pact, you know, a pact or a contract is something that could be viewed as a, you know, a legitimate transaction. The way this, if in the book, The Lennon Prophecy, I point out that this may have been something a little more devious, in as much as it may have been a bet. And just because of some of the way these clues have pointed in that direction, in as much as John Lennon may have said something to the effect, I'd like to be greater than Elvis Presley, because that was one of his main goals in life as a young boy, to the days when he lived with his Aunt Mimi, was to be greater than Elvis. And in fact, he was self-proclaimed, to be greater than, to be greater than Jesus, more popular than Jesus. And so maybe it was part of the bet that the devil made. I can make you more popular than Jesus, not even just Elvis, but Jesus.
And tell us about some of the other clues that you see in the music, in his writings, that indicate that this transaction had taken place.
Well, like I said, some of the clues were knowingly put there by the Beatles, and those are well documented in many books, hundreds of books that I've read, and this is nothing new. Anybody that is a Beatle fan, or maybe people who aren't even Beatle fans, see these things. But what touched the nerve with me were those clues that could not have possibly been put there by the Beatles, unless they, or John Lennon, was himself a prophet. Now, a prime example of a clue in which you would have to be a prophet is from the Magical Mystery Tour album. And this, again, anyone interested is welcome to go to the LennonProphecy.com site. And there's clues that I show on that website. Now, John Lennon in the movie The Magical Mystery Tour is walking out of a ticket office, and in the background is a sign that says the best way to go is by M and D C, which of course we know the best way to go is by Mark David Chapman. Now, that's an example. Opponents to this, or people in opposition, will say, well, M and D Coaches is a transportation company in England, but M and D Coaches, it doesn't say that. The picture is cropped off to say M and D C. So that would be one that, unless John Lennon or the others were prophets themselves, how could they possibly put that clue in there?
Okay. And you're saying they put that clue in there as opposed to it's just a coincidence that that's how the shot came out?
Well, like I said, I've given up on the word coincidence. There's too many aspects of this that you cannot just write off as a coincidence. Looking at that alone, okay, maybe that's a coincidence, they say. But you put this together, and that's just one of many.
Okay. But now let's say that there's a difference maybe between making a putting in clues as to his own demise. How does that signal to you a deal with the devil?
Well, these clues had to be coming from somewhere.
Okay.
They had to be coming from somewhere.
All right. William is in Amsterdam, Holland, for Joe Niezgoda, the Lennon Prophecy on the wild card line. William, I know you've been hanging on for a while, so we'll let you be first up.
Yeah, hi, Ian. Hey, Joe. How you doing?
I'm fine.
Well, the first thing I have to say is, George is absolutely correct that there is no such thing as coincidence. And I think a lot of your listeners know that you're dealing with something. Joe knows what he's talking about. I don't really know how deeply I could get into it, but I just know for a fact that he's correct. I was born in 66 when supposedly, the original Paul McCartney was murdered. But, I don't know how that connects into what Joe's talking about, but I do think it's all connected, because I think this is about witchcraft, and it's about whatever word you want to use, pact with the devil, but this has to do with sorcery. In other words, it has to do with major sorcery on a global scale. And if you look at everything, you can look at the clues, just like Joe says. And, everything's laid out on a checkerboard square of black and white.
Okay.
And if you look throughout the Beatles, my basic question is, what I'm trying to say is everything seems all weird and creepy, but when you really flush it all out, a guy like Joe is really making sense of this, because, I'm in Holland here, which was the setting of Dr. Faustus, and this thing about the devil keeps coming up in my life. So all I know is the devil, whoever or whatever that is, this all seems to dovetail into things that your guests like David Icke talk about.
Okay.
Things,
all right.
All right,
thank you,
Will. Tie some of this together. Yeah.
All right, appreciate that. Let's go to
I'd like to address one thing about that caller, which is true.
Sure.
These things, like I said, this book did not start out as a book. This was just a guy, myself, that was interested in researching this because I was fascinated with the Beatles. I wanted to be a part of the Beatles. How better to do that than to read books and get to know them? These things came to me like I said, I do not have ties with Satan. I do not have a hot phone line to heaven on this stuff. But I just opened my mind, and these things, I dare use the word channel. People use the term destiny, or they might say a calling. Well, it turns out that this, for whatever reason, seems to be my calling to write this book. It was my destiny.
Right.
And it took 15 years. I had plenty of time to turn away from it.
Arthur is in Ohio on Coast to Coast AM for Joe Niezgoda, author of The Lenin Prophecy. Arthur?
Hi, how you doing, Ian? Listen, I'm a writer. I dug some stuff up on John Lennon a couple of weeks ago that has never been heard in the world. Yoko Ono convinced John Lennon to not have a bodyguard. That is why he was murdered. Yoko Ono, if there was a pact with the devil, she has it. She is very much alive at the age of 75 right now.
Okay.
I don't know. It may be news to the world, but I dug it up on the internet.
Okay.
No, he is correct. It is true that Yoko, for inexplicably, canceled John's bodyguard for some reason. It's true.
Okay. All right. Matthew is in Medford, Oregon, on Coast to Coast AM for Joe Niezgoda, author of The Lenin Prophecy. Matthew, did John Lennon make a deal with the devil?
I'm not really sure, but from what I've been doing some research on the web, and I don't know what to think, really. But my question is, did his death did the CIA have anything to do with his death?
Did the CIA have anything to do with his death? Joe?
Well, I'll tell you, I've read many things about the CIA and, any of the books that have come out. And, again, this is a piss topic. This is probably 20 books rolled into one, because it goes off on numerology. It goes off on Satanism, Christianity, and also in governments. And so I did not really go down that particular avenue. But, yes, I have read where the CIA was involved. But, again, that's just like a theory, which is what I'm putting out here, a theory. But I didn't go down that avenue.
Now, how do you put in context what they refer to as John Lennon's born-again Christian phase? Christianity Today wrote about this. There was some discussion earlier this year that he had a period where he talked very highly about the philosophy of Jesus and how he saw the work of the Beatles as all being sort of, in harmony with that philosophy, with that theology. Where are you with that?
I have no idea what you're talking about, to tell you the truth. Like I said, I read many things. I haven't seen anything where I know that he was into peace, and people like to link that with, Christianity, because it is a common belief or a common thread. But, anything that I've ever read from him was always anti-Christian.
Really? You never saw the other stuff? Okay.
No.
All right. If you Google that, interesting stuff will come up for you on that subject. I don't know how you'll put it in context of the book, but I just thought I'd offer that to you.
Well, his whole life was, John Lennon's whole life was spent talking about Christianity, the occult. He was very much into the occult, Freddie Seaman's book. It's documented. Like I said, I put nothing in here. I made up nothing. Everything I did, I really, ad nauseum researched to the point where I referenced all these things that I'm saying.
No, I understand that. If you're interested, you might just put in John Lennon's born again phase and see whether that article pops up or some others that are like it. Joan is in Chicago on Coast to Coast AM for Joe Niezgoda. Joan?
Hi, how are you guys?
Hi, the Lennon Prophecy. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, ever since I was in college in the early 70s, and ever since he sang Imagine, anti-Christian, anti-heaven, Imagine There's No Heaven, I was suspicious of all his writings. But I listened to a number of his albums, and I used to like the Shaved Fish album. And I believe that the number 9 dream, followed by the Christmas song with Yoko and the kids, are definitely hit towards his predicting his own death. And I've never gone as far as you have in trying to say it's Satanism. But in the number 9 dream, someone calls out his name, he turns, and he's in a la-la, land.
Right.
And then the following song in Christmas, he sings the main verses, but he does not sing the Christmas chorus with Yoko and the children, which I always thought was like a clue. The night, you know, the night was the street. It was around Christmas, December 9th, and, you know, it was, to me, that all hinted of that.
Thank you, Joe.
I don't know what you think.
All right, go ahead, Joe. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because this caller is exactly, this is who this book was written for. We're trying to sort this out. It's always been out there. It's a mystery. You know, it started out as a puzzle. A puzzle, I started putting these pieces together, but a puzzle you can solve. This is a mystery that we'll probably never be able to solve. But the thing is about mysteries, unsolved, they grow more fascinating as time passes. And, I mean, something keeps beckoning us to reexamine and pore over the evidence and the clues. And that's just what this last caller's been doing, just as I have. And what I'm trying to do is try to make sense of this. You know, they say Mark Chapman was a deranged murderer. Well, I think there's more to it than that.
What do you mean by that?
And the fact that she brings up number nine, the number nine dream, that is absolutely, in my opinion, you know, a prophecy of his own death. Okay. That song was originally titled So Long. That was the original working title, So Long.
So when you say Mark David Chapman wasn't, what do you mean by that? You sort of implied that there was something more to it than other than him being crazy.
Well, anybody that, you know, I've read a lot of books, and one of the better books that I've read was Let Me Take You Down by Jack Jones, where he spent a great deal of time with Mark David Chapman. Mark David Chapman, people that knew him, his parents and people, his work associates, were aghast. They couldn't believe it was Mark. They just couldn't believe that he had the ability to do what he did. And, you know, he made no qualms about it, that he felt he was possessed by demons. And that demons drove him to this. Now, I got to be careful because, like I said, as a Beatle fan, I know how Beatle fans are. And they're going to be saying, well, this guy's writing this book, standing up for Chapman. Look, Chapman is a murderer. He's where he belongs, in Attica State Prison. He killed John Lennon. I understand that. But it's more than just a deranged guy. It seems to me. And he actually had, you know, it's documented where he had an exorcism performed on him in Attica State Prison, where these demons were driven out. Now, this isn't me saying that. This is all documented. And if you don't believe in exorcisms, well, that's fine. But Mark David Chapman did.
Right. Let's see. First-time caller line. John is in Rhode Island on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Yeah, hi, Ian. I have a question, but I'd like to just make a little comment concerning this whole theory first.
Don't have a lot of time, so you have to be brief on that.
I just want to say, first of all, I haven't heard anything that would even vaguely give a case for anything involving Satanism so far. It's just so far-fetched that I don't even grasp what he's getting at. But a previous caller mentioned John's involvement with Christianity, and I'm a Beatle fan of many years, and one thing I do know is that he was always spiritually oriented to the fact is, he studied with the Maharishi, which wasn't Christianity, but it was certainly all about spirituality and, you know, Christian value. So why would somebody who sold the soul to the devil want to become involved in, you know, Eastern spirituality? It doesn't make any sense.
All right, John, we'll leave that there. And Joe Niezgoda, the book is The Lennon Prophecy. And so for Beatles fans out there, you can also link up to him through his website and find out more about the case there. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate that. I knew it would be a lively time on the phones, and it was.
Okay, Ian, thank you very much. And I would like to say that anyone's welcome to go to thelennonprophecy.com, and they might be interested in what they find there.
Okay. Well, they can link up to that, like I said, through the coasttocoastam.com website. And they might be interested, too, in the book that's coming up next, Target Patton, The Plot to Assassinate General George S. Patton. We'll lay out the case with the historian Robert Wilcox. Absolutely fascinating next on Coast to Coast AM.